Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 270, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. We are here live and living color, getting funky like a monkey, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, I am really excited about tonight's show. You know what's so funny about this show, man? It's live and Pancakes and Power Slams, 270 episodes. We promise to give you the best weekly interviews and the best content, the headlines and everything. And we have sponsors and advertisers and all the good stuff that a podcaster can have. And of course, there's hiccups in the way. There was a scheduled interview for tonight, but there was some last-minute decision-making, some last-minute errors, some last-minute changes. But, you know, it's good to have good relationships and connections and just people who are willing to step in and really help out. So I wanted to, before I bring this person on tonight, I just really wanted to thank this person for really coming in at the 11th hour. I mean, I called him at like 8:30 and said, hey, I had a last-minute cancellation, and can you step in? And he, without hesitation, said he could step in. So I just want to give this person major, major kudos for interviewing, for being interviewed on the show tonight. So, you know, it's funny because an even greater debt of gratitude goes to this person. So I'm really excited about what we're going to talk about tonight. He's excited as well. We talked off air about some things, and he's got some awesome events coming up. And so I once again want to give a special, special thank you to this person for stepping in for tonight. It was just very chaotic and trying to get another interview, you know, 2 hours before the show started, 2.5 hours before the show started. But he took some time out of his busy schedule that he'll explain to you here in a moment to come on the show live. And I'm just very, very honored and privileged to have former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, UFC World Heavyweight Champion, the one, the only, Dan the Beast Severin. How are you tonight, sir?
Well, I'm doing great there, Chris. It's a little past the beast bedtime, but hey, you know, that's what they make coffee for.
Hey, the beast can never be tamed, so. So, yeah. I appreciate you coming on the show and stepping in at the last minute, man. We talked a little off air.
Yeah, I think this will be the first time that we've ever done an interview together, and I kind of always look forward to the chance to talk with new individuals and to share some of my stories and some of my insight.
Absolutely, absolutely. So one of the things, there's a lot of things in your story career that is very noteworthy. I'm sure you've talked about. I mean, I've heard previous interviews, and you've talked to other people about different things. One of the things that I'm really curious about is, I know that you had the NWA World Heavyweight Championship for an insane amount of time. Now, with this new NWA acquisition by Billy Corgan, first of all, what are your thoughts on that? And second of all, why was there such a kind of a dull period in NWA for a while? Because you held the title and the promotion ran idle for a while. Am I correct on that?
Yeah. I mean, there's just, if you want to go back just a little bit, I'll give you a little bit more history about it. When the idea came about to put the strap on me in the first place, it came from a gentleman from New Jersey, a promoter out of New Jersey by the name of Dennis Caruso.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, the NWA was almost extinct, meaning that there were only three promoters left in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And Dennis was one of them. And he talked to the other two gentlemen, and he had the idea, and that's how it kind of came about. And I even carried the belt was even carried out at the Oakland Fighting Championships, UFC number 5.
Mm-hmm.
Number 4 was my very first one there, and the belt came on me. That was actually, I always tell people, my very first belt I ever won in my life was the NWA belt from Chris Candido.
Mm.
And then the belt was carried out to UFC number 5, and the UFC officials at the time were really up in arms because they did not want to have any association whatsoever with professionals because they wanted everyone to know that, hey, what we're doing is the real deal. So, but
yeah,
I talked to them about the history and then some of the men that had held this belt in the past and basically who I am. Basically, they allowed it to happen, but it really did give a great deal of exposure. And, like I said, to hold a belt for as long as I did, that's unheard of in today's time. But at the same token, there's other people, such as like a Lou Fez that held the NWA belt for even a lot longer time frame. I think as it stands right now, I think these are the top 4, top 5 long time holders of the NWA belt, and I mean that's a very, very prestigious group of men that I'm very honored to be amongst it with. But the NWA, what it's doing, to kind of get me back to your more modern-day type of questions, I just hope, what happens, it's good of the NWA. That's what I'm really hoping for, that brings back some of the more stellar history and just some of the, hopefully some old-school type of values and things of nature. Make that belt prestigious once again.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and you held it for over 4 years and a very, very impressive run, and definitely one of the top, the most lengthy single reigns of all time. Of course, you had like a Dory Funk Jr. back in the 60s, I believe, and I think he was one of the longest reigning champions of all time as far as NWA. And I know Lou Thesz had it for an insane amount of time as well in the 40s.
Yeah, I think Lou had it for like close to a decade.
Yeah. I think he's up there, and I know you're up there. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, just the length of the reign is just really unheard of. As far as just especially the 90s, the early 90s was a good time. It was 80s and early 90s, especially the 80s and really 70s as well. But the Backlunds, the San Martinos, the Hogans, you know, they're known for their lengthy reigns in the 70s and 80s. But yeah, the mid 90s, you know, you're going into just a different time in wrestling, and have a four years.
Totally altogether. I mean, I was part of WWF's Attitude Era as well, and you know, just a lot of things. I've had a rather interesting career, and I always tell people some of the things that I never thought would ever I would ever do. I mean, the ironic part was I was into professional wrestling, kind of probably my strongest suit was from that junior high years of age. Yeah, mm-hmm. I have one older brother and a couple younger brothers, and you know, we used to watch, you know, Sunday afternoon big tournaments, but you know, that was the Sheik's outfit, so you always see the Sheik at Bobo Brazil and Brian Flurry and Larry Shane and you know, the people like this. And you know, so to grab your brother and do you know, power slam him onto the couch was like a natural thing to do.
Yeah, some power slams and elbow drops, yeah. So with the NWA acquisition, and just you said there were only three promoters. That's very interesting. As much as I know about wrestling, I didn't know it only went down to three promoters. Now, do you think
at the time that the belt was on me, there was only three that was left, and actually Dennis was one. There was one guy that was in only one that was actually in a different country, and two inside the United States. So basically, they basically agreed to do it, and then by the time I turned the strap over, you know, after 4 years, there were, I'm trying to think how many different countries came on board, how many just inside the state, the United States alone, I think there were just over 40 some promoters that were with the NWA once again, because I mean I was traveling all over the place, you know, between what I was doing in my cage fighting career, what I was doing with my professional career, even, you know, I was never exclusive to anybody. Even when I was working for the WWF, you know, now known as WWE, I was not exclusive to them. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as I know, I think I'm the only professional wrestler ever to be non-exclusive. So I could work for them, and then next week I'd be working for, you know, an NWA professional wrestling company, and then whoever else wanted to book me on top of that. But then here I am at the Ultimate Fighting Championship, even then, I was not solidified to the Ultimate Fighting Championships. I mean, it was so I could work for anybody in the fight world. So I made all my own deals with all the various promoters and promotions.
Mm-hmm. Now, why do you think that the NWA promotion dwindled down so quickly? Do you think it had something to do with Shane Douglas is when he won the championship and threw it down, and kind of the advent of Extreme Championship Wrestling? Do you think that promoters pulled out after that, or do you think it was just kind of inevitable?
I honestly couldn't tell you because I really was not. I was not that informed as to what was happening with the NWA, why they dwindled down the way that they did. So I thought that they did a lot more of my research and stuff like this after I had to strap on. More and more people seemed like they were coming out of the woodwork and educating me. A lot of wrestlers, but then a lot of other historians, professionals and historians were educating me more and more and more all the time. And it kept thinking, and more and more prestigiously, I looked upon this belt. You know, I always tell people that I paused a moment there because I was reaching over to grab, because I have this book that was written by Carl Stern. I'm just going to see if there's an actual date onto it. But this is, it's the Ultimate Professional Wrestling Book List. And for example, I see I've got a couple of markers. NWA World Heavyweight Champions ranked by total number of days as champion. And, I made the top five with Dory Funk Jr. ahead of me, Harley Race, Ric Flair, and number one person, Lou Fez.
Mm.
So a very prestigious group there to be with.
Yeah, Absolutely. Very, very much. So you spent, you were talking about the WWE, you spent a couple of years there. Who scouted you? Who was interested in you? Who gave you the call as far as coming to the WWE? And what was the creation behind that? Because I know that Ken Shamrock, you know, was another big UFC star there around that time, and you feuded with Ken Shamrock. Did you come in for the sake of Shamrock? What was the really the mastermind? Who was the mastermind behind that? And what was the overall plan, you know, to bring you in?
Well, I don't know who had the mastermind plan in the first place, but I simply know that they were in contact with both Ken and I just about the exact same time. Always I say that because, you know, when Ken went in, I went in almost 1 year later only because of negotiations. You know, basically, you know, the WWE did not know how old I was. And I did not want to be exclusive. Because the whole thing is, I simply knew that, you know, they were just looking at basically a couple-year contract and possibly being renewed. And I kept thinking, there's no way I'm going to put all my eggs into one basket and then at the, in the conclusion of 2 years, had to restart over everything else I had going on. And so I ended up doing most of my conversations were with Jim Ross. And, you know, that didn't take really all that long after my conversation with Jim Ross that, you know, we finally came to an agreement. And so here I went, when I'm finally in the office back in Connecticut and contracts are signed and, you know, everyone's slapping each other on the back, shakes their, you know, hands are being shaked and, you know, people laughing, the whole nine yards. You know, through part of the conversation, I think there's some different type of, I'll say, dates type of things that were being thrown around. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, Vince like, well, he's like, well, just how old are you? And then I told him, I think I was 48 at the time. And he like turns to Jim Ross and he goes, well, who's our oldest rookie ever been? And Jim Ross didn't even hesitate. He points right at me. He goes, well, Dan is. But yeah, I did not look my age, nor did I act my age. Yeah, I defied. Chris, I've had a very interesting career in other, lots of aspects that I did things at a young age that most will never do. So I defied the barriers at a young age. Doing, like, for example, just out of high school, I graduated my senior year in 76. So 18 years of age, I go to my very first Olympic trials in 1976. And the real irony to it all, I mean, you know, I'm kind of blown away for the fact that there are men there that I have read their books. Mm-hmm. I've been to their wrestling camps, their clinics, and now I'm actually on the mats wrestling against them. And it's, you know, that was, and I made it to the top six in the country. So I defied odds that I was actually brought right into the training camp because I was so young. They're like, well, gosh, we definitely want to bring this young man in because look at all the potential that he possesses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like, that was great. But then, you know, let's fast forward it almost, you know, that's by 1976. By 1996, I'm the number one cage fighter in the world. You know, there's a 20-year span. I mean, what's the guy been doing? Just eating cookies and drinking milk? I don't think so.
Yeah, very, very, very impressive 20-year run. And I'm
tell people because I go time tables. I tell people that what I did from 72 to 76. In my high school, nobody has yet repeated yet.
Mm-hmm.
I was a 3-time All-American, 2-time state champion. But in the process of my 4 years of wrestling as an amateur wrestler, I set and held 8 national records simultaneously, which is still a national record to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of winning the freestyle national title, Greco-Roman national title, but as a damage wrestling and then go from mm-hmm. there to wrestling in college and then going into from there to you know, when opportunity comes afterwards by 1992, you know, a new rule comes down from the United States Olympic Committee that, that allows athletes to be both amateur and professional simultaneously. So I was passed by collegiate eligibility so I could have my cake and eat it too. I did not want to lose my amateur status. But like now, I can still go in and try making like a national team or world team or Olympic team now if I still really want to. The thing that's against me is father time.
Yeah. And you, like you mentioned, you were 48 going into the WWE. You had a 2-year run there. It was a decent run. What was your overall thoughts of your run in WWE and just your overall relationship with Vince McMahon and what really led to you walking away?
Well, I mean, in the beginning, I'll say I was used properly. But then I think the realization, and I don't know who came up with the realization, but they sure never spoke to me about it, but the realization that they did not have the control mechanisms over me.
Mm.
They could not, you know, they couldn't really hold anything against me and because I was basically a free agent. I could work for anybody and everybody, including WCW and ECW because they both existed at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same token, they never really knew me or the type of person I am. I mean, Chris, do you bite the hand that feeds you? I mean, when you think about it, are you going to bite the hand that basically is financially securing you? Where else can you make this kind of money?
Right.
Except for the professional wrestling world. But at the same token, I'll go off onto another aspect of professional wrestling. Is there another company that you are aware of in the world that if you have a problem, an addiction, that company is willing to, at their expense, send you off, clean you back up, and then bring you back and rehire you again? Is there another company that you can think of off the top of your head?
No.
Exactly. Me neither. I suppose it's the only in the wacky world of professionals, and not on just one occasion. There are some individuals that have spent 2, 3, or more occasions.
Oh, yeah.
Now, to me, that's throwing good money after bad. There's, you know, stupidity. I'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
one of
the what exactly caused you to walk away?
You know, they brought both Ken and I on and at the same time, but you know, to me, it's like you know, I was being used really well and really strong in the beginning, and then you know, I think that realization that they did not have the any type of control mechanisms over me, so I don't think they knew how to use me, but at the same token, they never brought me in. But at the same token, you know, this world of professional wrestling was new to me as well. Maybe I should have been a little bit more vocal or you know, express my own opinion in the process. But, I mean, they've got an entire creative team. You've got half a dozen or more people that are on that creative team that are coming up with ideas and stuff like this. You would have thought that they could come up, but the fact that, you know, they're afraid to put a belt on me because, well, gosh, if we put a belt on him, who's to say that, you know, Dan Severn is going to be over wrestling in WCW? And now he's going to let you know some goofball character in WCW, you know, just you know pin him in no time at all, and what's that going to do to our title belt here or something like that? But did they ever speak to me? No. Yeah, when I travel, I have 4 belts, 4 of the most prestigious belts in the world: 3 from the Ultimate Fight, 3 from the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And the end of the belt, all 4 of those belts are always proudly displayed. And people, they come up there, they recognize the NWA belt. They recognize the UFC belts, but then when they say, well, NWA wrestling, they're like, well, what is NWA wrestling? I go, it's a professional wrestling organization, much like WWE or TNA. And they're like, oh, you mean the fake stuff. I go, well, I said, look, don't say fake. I said, you obviously you recognize these three belts. And I said, oh, yeah, UFC. Oh, love that stuff. And I go, I said, why is it that I've been hurt far worse in my professional wrestling career than in my entire cage fighting career? And they're like, really? And that's a truthful statement. But then again, that's because you have a lot of professional wrestlers that are very poorly trained, or the fact that they have ceased their training because they think that they're just good enough to go out there and continue just to work matches without ever going back and continuing to hone their skills.
Yeah. Wow. So. Very interesting that you were hurt more in wrestling than you were in cage fighting. But it makes sense, though, too, because a lot of times in wrestling, you put your whole body, you entrust your whole body in someone's hands as opposed to
fighting.
You know,
the high flyers. When you think about the high flyers, I refer to those as leaps of faith. When you run and you do these swanton dives and things of this nature out of the ring, that if you misgauge, you could hit the railing, you could hit the concrete floor, and some guys have. And their careers is cut short there too, because the injuries, the flyers, their careers are cut short just because of the risk factors. It's the inevitability of sooner or later something's going to happen. I've always was a kind of a very fall in the category of that scientific wrestler. You know, I didn't really leave my feet a whole lot. I was actually, well, Jim Cornette was really, he was kind of like one of my mouthpiece, and he had a great deal of frustration because he was with the WWF the exact same time I was there, and he was with the creative team, and there was on one occasion especially where he comes out, I'm basically sitting there in the cafeteria area just kind of killing time because it was interesting. I learned a lot of things about that company in the sense that they always wanted the talent to show up somewhere between 12 and 1 o'clock. And I kept thinking, why so early for a show that doesn't start until, 7, 8 o'clock at night? Why so early? But then after a while, I kept thinking, well, because it's a glorified babysitting job. Because there's a lot of this talent that's not real reliable about being there, being on time, or if they do show up, what kind of shape are they in when they do show up?
Yeah.
What are they underneath the influence of? Did they lose all the gear? I mean, it was the point that they had people there that, like makeup people that could, if you come in, and you look rough and haggard over, well, they could color your hair, take the dust of circles out from underneath your eyes, get you squared away to where, they could always do everything except wrestle a match. They even had two steam systems so that if your outfit was torn or if your ring costume, you lost it. Oh, they could whip up another costume for you in a matter of probably a couple hours. So it was amazing. They always had a cafeteria set up. To get there so early, I always had my planner with me. I had a cell phone, so to me it's like, I'm working on stuff.
Wow.
So Jim Cornette, Jim Cornette comes into the cafeteria, and he walks over to me, he says, that creative TV, they don't have a clue as to what to do with you. He goes, you're the greatest thing ever to happen to professional wrestling. He goes, you're a wrestler. You're a wrestler who can wrestle. You don't have to sit there just pose and flex and cut promos. He says you can twist anybody up into knots. And now let's fast forward a few years, several years forward then. I happen to be in Los Angeles with a couple of the business people, and I meet Bill Goldberg for the first time ever. And so we're all having lunch. And, just kind of sharing stories back and forth, just kind of getting to know each other. And partway through lunch, he reaches over and nudges me on the shoulder. He goes, thanks. I go, for what? He says, dude, I was you. He said, I watched you in the Ultimate Fighting Championships. He says, you know, when you raised those arms and did that crazy look in your eyes and stuff like this. He goes, I was you. I laugh. I go, I go, you did me better than I did myself.
Yeah, he just recently came back for May run, and it was pretty successful.
Yeah, you bet.
You know. Yeah, very true. So, Dan, let the listeners know where they can find you now. I know that you've got some training, some MMA training going on, and from the latest reports, you're still doing a little bit of wrestling, and you still have a little bit of desire to do some MMA. There were some recent reports of you wanting to do one last showdown with King Shamrock. How true is that?
Yeah, well, the Sham, I don't think we'll ever get an opportunity again. It's I was supposed to have a match that was supposed to take place this past year, and you know, I had officially retired from the cage fight world as of January 2013, but I retired with a clause. I said you know, because I was pushing hard my last few years there to try to get one more hurrah with Mark Colbert, Ken Chandler, Chris Gracie. Those were my last three people I would rather wanted to do a match with. And you know, Mark is off the list because Mark Coleman has had two artificial hip replacements. And so, I mean, health-wise, he's off, but you still have Hoyce Gracie and you still have Ken Shamrock. They did a relatively recent match, I'd say, with what, maybe 5-6 months back, something like that. They did a match in Bellator. And so to me, it's like they were still a viable candidate. But
yeah.
What a lot of people realize, Ken had already signed an agreement to do a match with me on the Sunday, 2 days after his match with Hoyce Gracie. How is he going to do that? No promotion would ever allow you to do one match and then another two match 2 days later, because I mean, the risk of injury, things of that nature. But you know, like I said, that's neither here nor there. I was looking to do it one more match, but it just didn't seem like it was meant to be. So
yeah.
I may just have to simply just ride off to the sunset, knowing that I've accomplished a lot in that world, and I still continue to have my own MMA promotion, known as Danger Zone MMA. If any of the listeners want to look that up, it's just go to Facebook page Danger Zone MMA. But I also run a small professional as a company known as POG, which stands for Price of Glory. POG Wrestling. Or Price of Glory Wrestling. You can look up again on Facebook page Price of Glory Wrestling, and you'll find a lot of interesting just articles and the characters that are on there, because that's what all the professionals in is. I prefer more the character type of wrestling. You know, to me, it's you always can have the flyers. You can always have tag team single matches, things of that nature. So, but I want people to be over the top of those characters, because I run a very family-friendly show, so that I'm not just looking for a 18-plus year of audience. I want to know that moms and dads who enjoy watching professionals, and when they were younger, now they can bring their sons and daughters, and they can all sit there together and not have to worry about, you know, costume failures or doing new gestures and things of that nature. So I run a very family-friendly product right here in Coldwater, Michigan. I also have my own 10,000 square foot training facility right on my property right here in Coldwater, Michigan as well. So as far as I know, I'm the only training facility in the world that has, under the same roof, amateur wrestlers, professional wrestlers, and cage fighters, adult classes, kid classes. But your listeners can go to Facebook page, Michigan Sports Camps. On top of that, I work with law enforcement, corrections, air marshals, border patrol, military, and as far as I know, I'm the only civilian ever to be brought on base for the world's largest private security company. So
wow.
I must be doing something right there, Chris. I must be doing something right.
That's a pretty stacked resume there, Dan. Maybe one day. Soon, you're about to be 60 next year, and maybe you may add the oldest UFC champion of all time.
Well, I don't think the UFC will pull me back in. It's a possible run for the NWA that might.
I think you might draw some money, Dan.
The question, okay, Chris, who in the world would they ever put me up against that would even be close to my age?
You think you could? How about you and Brock Lesnar?
Oh, you mean Beast versus the Beast title?
Yes, Beast versus Beast.
But see, I the thing is that I would want to put into place there is I want to make sure that both of us have to be tested.
Hmm.
I take a great deal of pride in the fact that I have lived a lifetime chemical-free competitive life. So I don't think both of us would say that.
And everything comes clear. Everything's clear with you. What do you say? Beast versus Beast.
Yeah, well, you get your people to talk to his people and then to get back to my people. How's that?
I'll
definitely entertain that. I'll definitely entertain that idea. But I don't think this. You know, ironic part was, you know, even for the match with Ken, I had to go through because of my age. Realistically, anything over 30, I think it's 37 or 38 years of age, for almost every state athletic commission, anyone over that 37, 38 years of age, you have to go through an additional test because you're already over the norm. When I started at 37 years of age, when I started my cage fighting career. So, you know, I always tell people, my first profession was professional wrestling as of the 92 Olympics. The UFC did not even exist until 1994. Well, technically, December 1993. Close enough to where I just always tell people, it's 1994. So, yeah, a lot of people think that I was always a cage fighter, but no, because they've always, because, you know, I went from the UFC to the WWF, and they're like, oh, you're a sellout. I go, really? I said, if anyone should really be mad at Dan Severn, it should be the professional wrestling people for selling out to go in the cage, but then all the other cage fight people, oh, no, that's okay. I think, so we have a little catch 22 here right now, huh?
Hmm. Yeah, but you trained, you like all the big resume that you said, you're still very, very active. You're still, you know, you're still competing. You're still wrestling. You just wrestled a couple weeks ago, so
yeah.
You know, you're still
just a couple weeks ago. Almost each weekend, I've had enough to different locations. Forget about my normal work week. What I should do during the course of my normal work week, but this coming weekend I'll be wrestling in the POG. Couple weekend, and we have our show that's taking place in Coldwater, Michigan. And I'll be wrestling on the card there as I take on FIA. And then my Sunday, that's on Saturday night, my Sunday morning, I will be headed to Detroit, jumping on an airplane, heading back to Arizona just to be there for 30 days, be 30 hours before I jump on my next plane, heading over to, the Virgin Islands.
Ah, that's where I have a honeymoon at.
That's for what now?
That's where I had my honeymoon at back in 2010, same time.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Good stuff, Dan. I really, really appreciate you taking your time and being on the show tonight. And once again, just really availing yourself, relatively last minute. Such amazing information you've shared tonight. And I tell you what, I would love to see a Beast versus Beast showdown. I think that has money written all over it. So, like you said,
well, you get all your listeners to make that rally, you know, and
yes.
We'll see if we can make that happen.
Hashtag for all the listeners out there, hashtag Beast versus Beast. Do it now. Do it when you listen to archives. Do it. Hashtag Beast versus Beast. That is going to go viral, and I think Daniel White's going to pay attention and be interested and consider. So, You know, you can thank me if you get a phone call in the next few weeks.
All right. I will definitely do that, Chris. And to all the other listeners, if you, those who don't really know who I am, there you go to my website at dansevern.com. Whatever, www.dansevern, Severn is spelled S-E-V-E-R-N, dansevern.com. And you can see some of the information about what I do, but there's still a lot more information that has gone up there. I actually have a book that came out from Amazon.com, and within the first, whatever, 2 or 3 weeks, it went right to Amazon.com's number one best bookseller. So pretty happy about that as well.
Congratulations on all you've done, all you are doing, all you're going to do, Dan. I really, really appreciate your time. Fantastic conversation, and I really appreciate it, man.
Okay. You take care, Chris.
You too. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan the Beast Severin, former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, one of the top three or four longest NWA champions in history, in the championship history. And I tell you what, I kid you not, I'm very, very serious about this. I want to see this. He's one of the most dangerous, one of the most notorious, meanest, scariest people in UFC history. Brock Lesnar, you know, he retired, kind of, but, you know, I doubt that, you know, he really retired. So even if Bellator picks it up, you know, that would be something very interesting. But I think, you know, UFC or Bellator, that will get some money. Severin's willing to do it. I think Brock Lesnar is next as far as, you know, if he's willing to do it. Of course, you know that WWE's worked with UFC before to allow Lesnar to fight. Lesnar's contract is up next Mania. So, hey, he might take that time and go back to UFC. He had that itch when he went against Mark Hunt. He may have it again. So it sounds like a hashtag Beast versus Beast showdown created here at the Pancakes and Power Slam show. We will spread that until we get Dan Severin versus Brock Lesnar. Evan Tech Proud, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, Beast versus Beast. Brock Lesnar has to have him. The meanest mustache in the world. Good old Danny boy.
Yeah.
Good friends with Dan. He's been on my show numerous times. Just got to speak. Just spoke to Dan not long ago, a few weeks ago, off air, so. Love Dan. It'll be good, man. I think Dan priced the tape, Brock.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
He's still in good shape. Still look good.
Yeah, he is. Almost 60 years old, but still in really, really good shape and doing a lot of
He sounds so nice. He's so nice and so humble.
Yeah,
he could kill you like within the snap, within the blink of an eye.
Exactly.
Or break your bones.
Yeah. Very interesting. I'll tell you what, I'm starting the hashtag. This will be in the internet community. This will be on the airwaves as far as many outlets covering it. And like I'd like to do every week, I want to send a very humble shout out and very grateful shout out to all the media outlets who cover my show every week. I'm really, really excited about this because I'm sure I'm right about it, of course. And I'll tell you what, man, he's open to fighting Brock Lesnar and a hashtag Beast versus Beast showdown. The hashtag starts tonight, and we're going to make it happen. So let's get to the headlines with the Beast versus Beast showdown. Here we go. He continues to tease the 2020 presidential election. And it all started off as a big joke, but now he's it seems like he's teasing a little bit more. It seems like it caught wind enough for him to consider a little stronger. And interestingly enough, there's some polls going around that have him beating Donald Trump in the 2020 election. Now, I don't know I don't know what party he's choosing, but they just did some random poll just in case he decided to go, you know, Democrat or independent. They had a poll with him and Trump, and he's beating Donald Trump. So that's not saying a lot. I'm saying that as a conservative. That's not saying a lot, though. But at the same time, right now, if this was 2020, Barack would be the next president of the United States.
Interesting. Now, I mean, let's see how it goes. I don't know if Dwayne, you know, The Rock will really do it or not. I mean, he might be having fun, but you know, he's one of the biggest stars there is in the world. And you know, wrestling, and you know, he's a household name. So me, you know, The Rock didn't know. So they definitely got to think of a career. I mean, he doesn't wrestle much anymore. So wrestling was like, well, at one point he was wrestling like once a year, like Christmas, and now he just shows up whenever he wants TV or see. So it's a good talk. I think The Rock's right. He's playing with people's ears, taking on that fancy just to see the response he gets. But you know, I remember Hogan was supposed to run for president too back in like 98, 99.
Yeah. So he said. But he told GQ though that he was willing, you know, he was open to consider it, basically. So you know, it would be very interesting to see. And I would be interested to see the campaign of The Rock. And you know, just to see how much wrestling he would put into that. So but yeah. Piece I wrote on recently on the Inquisitor. About Jeff Jarrett. Now, I'll start with this. The Jeff Jarrett that I've met, that I've had interactions with, have, you know, he's been very, very nice to me. I hear a lot of background noise in the back, but he's been very nice to me. And, you know, I met him before, and I've shared this story before. I went to Ohio, and he lived in Tennessee, and he randomly stopped on the east side of Columbus to get gas to promote a TNA show. And he was driving back to Tennessee, and he randomly stopped on the east side of Columbus. And I so happened to be at that gas station. it was so weird. And I saw Karen Jarrett go to the go inside, you know, the store, the gas station, and while he was pumping gas. And I saw Karen. I said, "Wait a minute! There, you know, she has a very distinguished look, a very distinct look."
Right.
And I looked at her. I was like, "That's Karen Jarrett." And I don't know if they're married or maybe newly married at the time. But I looked. I was like, "Okay, now she's there." Now I have to look at the car and see who's with her. It has to be Jeff. And I looked, and lo and behold, Jeff Jarrett was right there pumping gas. So I went up to him. And I said, "Hey, my name is Chris Featherstone. I'm such and such and such, and you know, I'm a big fan of wrestling." And he said, "Hey, here's two free tickets to a TNA live event here in Columbus. I was doing some promotion work. I'm heading back down to Tennessee, and there you go, free tickets." I said, "Oh, perfect.
Well,
thanks
yeah.
a lot." Took a picture with him, and we both went our merry way. There's been I started picking up conversation back with him last year about having some people from GFW and just, you know, him and I went back and forth with chats about just as far as what GFW is doing. And we've chatted a bunch of times through email, and I recalled that story. And this is probably, this had to be about 2009, 2010. Yeah. I'd say about 09, about 09, maybe even 08, 09. And it was very, very interesting. And he remembered that story. He remembered that encounter that we had, and he commented on it. So I've had nothing but positive, you know, just conversation and just, you know, interaction with Jeff Jarrett. But I've I've heard otherwise from many people, unfortunately. And, you know, PW Insider recalled a time, Dave Scherer from PW Insider, he recalled a time where he was about to, he was being considered to work under work for TNA, and Jeff Jarrett expected him to work for free for a month. And he was talking about how Jeff Jarrett had that old school mentality of, you know, kind of people earning their keep and, you know, working for free and then kind of earning their way to more money. Of course, that's a terrible way to think, but, you know, it's an old school way of thinking. That's the reason why a lot of times people say negative things about him and his father, Jerry, because they had a way of snubbing people. And that's unfortunately, that's a stigma that comes with the Jarrett family. So very interesting information. And, you know, I've heard, like I said, I've heard similar things from a lot of people.
Yeah. It seems with Jarrett and, especially with Jarrett and also the Colognes in Puerto Rico was, not getting their pay and not getting paid at all in Puerto Rico. But like you said, like you, Jarrett's always been great to me. One of the nicest guys in the business. He's always looked out for me and my staff. Karen has always been a sweetheart. You know I've done work with Jarrett, you know, a few ago before shows, TNA shows, and whatever events that Jarrett's done. So, like I said, the nicest guy, and we text, you know, we see us, he's always been on his way to make sure that we were accommodated and we were okay. So, and nothing bad to say about Jarrett. Like you said, nicest guy, good person, and I've heard, like you heard a lot of the boys, some of the boys mentioned what they said, Jared wants you to work for free, or, you know, they really wasn't getting the payoffs that they were supposed to get. So, kind of hard, you know, when you get to a certain level of respect, a lot of the boys to wrestle for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like you dealing with regular indie wrestlers. Yeah, him and did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and did.
He just didn't intend to do his. Yeah, his was unintentional. He just didn't have the money. So
yeah.
He would just did the same thing.
Yeah. I'm still waiting for that first Global Force TV show. TV taping.
Oh, it's not gonna happen. I think it's supposed to be in Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen. As a matter of fact, there's talks that they're Bound for Glory, which is actually my birthday. Not Bound for Glory, but Slammiversary. There's talks that they're going to do a merge. GFW is going to kind of blend into Impact, which makes sense because right now, you know, I've said this before, I'm open to watch Impact every week. You know, like I've interviewed Eli Drake, I've interviewed Laurel Van Ness, I've interviewed Abyss, I've interviewed Al Snow, I've interviewed a bunch of other names that I can't even think of right now from Moose. I've interviewed Moose before. Sanjay Dutt. I give it a chance because the people, I'm cool with a lot of the people in TNA.
Right. Yeah.
And so because of that, I give it a chance because a lot of people just believe that TNA is just dead weight right now. It's just damaged goods. It's just basically clawing and scratching, you know, especially with the legal stuff going on with the Hardys and just really, they just can't find a way to just clear the air completely of any type of dirt that's going on. So, and it's unfortunate, but I'm willing to give it. I mean, the weekly product is not, it's not that bad.
Not
it really
bad.
Isn't. It's
not
bad.
Better than WWE lately.
It's interesting. You know, the star power isn't necessarily there as much, but of course you got your Lashleys, your James Storms, EC3, you know, but still, it's just something that's just hovering over the air with Impact Wrestling.
It's like a dark cloud.
Yeah, it's a dark cloud that just kind of hovers over the company. that so many people have that perception. You know, that's the reason why they're, you know, a little under 3 million, you know, 300,000 people now, and they had up to 2 million, you know, and it's like that big drop is because the financial issues and just they've created such a dark cloud hovering over them. But the actual product isn't bad. I don't think it's bad.
Yeah.
I watch it. You know, I watch it on a weekly basis.
It's not bad. It's been better than Raw the past few weeks.
It's just something about the brand, you know, and just Global Force blending in with Impact. I don't think it's going to make it any better. Right now they have
the
GSW. Yeah.
It is
the owl. Yeah, it's for the birds. It's for the owls. But just right now they have the Global Force Championship, the Global Force Tag Team Championship, the Global Force Women's Championship, and then all of those titles in TNA as well. Well, including
they got like 12 titles.
Yeah, so you
like
have
12 titles.
You have the Impact World Championship. You have the GFW World Championship, or they call it the Global Championship. You have both companies' tag team titles. You have both companies' women's titles, so the women's and knockouts. And then you have the X Division title. So you have 7 championships right now in GFW that, I mean, you just don't have the talent, you know, or at least you're not pushing the talent good enough to work with 7 different championships.
Titles, right.
Yeah. So a merge is inevitable. They have to merge it. I mean, just having 7 championships is, you know, for that type
it's,
of roster, no good.
It's something I predicted. I've had, you know, as you know, anybody listening live knows now, I've had Jared on my show numerous times, and, you know, I predicted this a year ago. I already said, you know, being at going to a Global Force show and doing some press work there myself, and I said that, you know, like, Jared is waiting so he can merge Global Force and TNA.
Mm-hmm.
It was the inevitable. And now it's happening. You have the bird, and it's kind of the thing with Impact is for TNA. It's like they like still call it TNA. Is when you hear so much negativity and you hear so much down and so much drought about a company. And then even when it tries to be well and it tries so hard, you try to go past it. That's just all you know. And then psychologically, people look at it like, well, they're not doing this right. And it's kind of like, well, it's going to take a while for them to kind of get off that stain and get that stain off that's left in their brand and their image of the bad wrestling and of the bad angles.
Yeah.
Not to say that the other wrestling out here that it's going to know this ain't better. But they don't have a history, or should I say, the story system like Impact has, of bad things.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think, you know, it took a good amount of years to that stitch to linger in the air of Impact. And sadly, you know, if she can still tag and last and survive, it may take just as many years, if not a little longer, to kind of get that stench away. So it can be, you know, a clean slate. So that's how I look at it. Like I said, Impact really isn't that bad. We all have friends that work for Impact and Global Force that we've had on our shows and that we do talk off air. So we hope all it goes well. I mean, I enjoy Impact for what it is. The ring looks kind of small, like the wrestling toy ring. But You gotta give them credit. You gotta give them credit for doing some things right.
Yeah, and of course, really, you know, WWE needs that competition. I mean, no matter what anybody says about Impact Wrestling, they need the competition just for, you know, for WWE is being heavily criticized by hardcore fans, and for them to be the, you know, exclusive major television show would just be terrible. I certainly don't want Impact, or I don't want them to go under, but there's just, they just have to get rid of that dark cloud. They just have to. Right, let's get to the Raw and SmackDown review. So with Raw was in Greenville, South Carolina. I'll just fly through the results here. Miz TV, Sheamus and Cesaro interrupted by Dean Ambrose. Then the Hardy Boys, Hardys and Dean Ambrose defeats Sheamus, Cesaro and Miz. Elias Sampson defeats Zach Evans. Samoa Joe defeats Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor. Rich Swann defeats Noam Dar. Titus O'Neil defeats Kalisto. The Bayley, This Is Your Life. Yikes. Yeah, Aries and Gallagher defeated Neville and TJP. I believe it was TJP that.
Yes, it was TJP.
And then Roman Reigns defeats Seth Rollins. That was a fantastic match. SmackDown, you got Kevin Owens highlight reel, guest Shinsuke Nakamura, then Baron Corbin comes out, and Sami Zayn comes out and makes a save because Nakamura is getting jumped. Nakamura and Zayn defeats Owens and Corbin. Owens have been pinned twice by Nakamura, so they're setting up a match between him and Owens next week. Usos in-ring promo interrupted by The New Day makes their official SmackDown debut. Charlotte and Natalya versus Charlotte, Natalya, Becky Lynch, Carmella, and Tamina all fight before the match even starts. No contest. Shane McMahon comes out and announces the first ever Women's Money in the Bank match. Breezango defeats the Colognes. They had a big segment backstage beforehand. It was quite funny. Clues. Orton comes back. He got some type of promo about generations, what his dad and granddad would do. So it was, so his granddad was a part of a silent generation. He would just go and beat people's butts instead of talk about it. And he said, that's what I'm going to do. But he kept talking, which was odd. And then Jinder Mahal comes out. He appears on the Titantron, him and the Singh brothers. He cuts a promo and ends with just a weird overselling mean face again. And then Ziggler defeats AJ Styles, which was the main event. They're giving Ziggler some steam to make him look like a relevant contender for the Money in the Bank. And they kept showing video packages of the 2012. They kept referencing the 2012 win. So it seems like they're really trying to – they're not making Ziggler like the main event guy again, but they're making him kind of like a very – important placeholder, kind of like what they did last year when he went against Dean Ambrose for the WWE Championship. Just that placeholder spot. So, what are your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown?
Yes, Raw was so overshadowed. Like I said, the dark cloud. And in my show, we talked about the worst segments ever. This Is Your Life with Bayley.
Oh,
it was so bad. You retweeted, my eyes was itching, my eyes was burning, I lost my voice, I can't feel my toenails or my fingernails. It was so horrible. And now, as bad as that segment is, this is horrible. The crowd wasn't that good either for all of Raw. The crowd was bad. It wasn't that good. For me, overall, I didn't think I'm going to review Featherstone or not. Well, I'm not going to mention other people's shows on here. Some people's shows say they thought this Raw was bad. I thought this Raw, compared to the past few weeks, had a lot of shining points to it. Just got overshadowed by the horrible segment. Goldust and R-Truth segment I thought was really well done, which I thought was funny. The Triple Threat match with Joel Wyatt and Valor. I thought was well done. I thought that was well done. I thought the promo between Joe and Wyatt was cool. I wonder where Wyatt is actually at when he does his promos. Joe looks exactly the same that he's been the past 15 years, same towel, same boots, same trunks, same beard, same haircut. the main event was incredible between Reigns and Rollins. And like I said, I'm not the biggest Reigns fan, but they get it done. It's funny how they both do the same exact taunt when they come out to the ring. And a shout out to Seth Rollins doing his new taunt, his little hand claw thing from Spectre Gadget. Well, whatever that was, you call it, little hand. I don't know what that is. But overall, had a lot of bright spots. That segment was just horrible. Titus O'Neil beating the cruiserweight holding his tights. The black ball, these two black men, they're bald headed. We're just going to throw them together. That makes no sense. So, overall, because all just that segment, there's nothing you could have done that could have reached that segment. It was just so bad. And SmackDown, I thought SmackDown was a little lesser than Raw. It did for like 3 hours, even though SmackDown was only two. The Fashion Police is starting to become my favorites right now. And all of WWE, the hilarious New Day's back, get the Yahoo okay. Still don't know what the Usos are, I guess they're thugs. Love Ziggler and AJ Styles, which is a dream match.
12 days.
That was funny. It's funny, you look at AJ Styles and Ziggler, dream match people talked about for years. And I was just thinking, like, wow, if this match is on Impact, I wonder how people were actually perceived it.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought the match was good. The ending was pretty abrupt, so it did catch me off guard with Ziggler winning with the super kick in that position. But it was well done. I think the crowd was caught off guard. See that Ziggler beat him fair and square. Yeah. I thought AJ had his foot on the ropes. But, yeah, I would give it to AJ. It was a good match. Ziggler needed to win. And like you said, of course, they're setting up with Owens against Nakamura next week. It's pretty sure Owens will win to kind of get his feet back. But overall, like I said, it wasn't a bad week. Just that segment. Gosh.
Yeah.
That segment.
Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah.
Shout
I agree.
Out to Neville's weird ears. Yeah. Shout out to Neville's weird elf ears. His ears are so, they look so weird.
He's mentioned that the ride along. I think he had a ride along with Sami Zayn, and he was talking about his ears, which was very funny. Neville, when he did the whole ride along thing, was hilarious. He was really, really funny. There's a couple other videos I've seen him in that he was just hilarious. So it seems like he's one of those people. Yeah, I've heard he was hilarious. I've heard that. Luke Gallows is one of the funniest people backstage.
I've talked to him before in the Global Force days. Great guy, very funny guy, big gentle giant, very very humorous.
Yeah, I've communicated with him through email before. So yeah, he was a very nice guy. I mean, as far as Raw, just very similar sentiments. You know, like you, just as far as. That This Is Your Life was just so bad. There really hasn't been a really good This Is Your Life since Rock. I mean, because they tried to do it with Cena and it flopped. So I mean, it wasn't good. I mean, they it's one of those things that you really can't recreate. It was so good when they did it with The Rock, but it's because that Rock and Sock connection. It was a story behind it. It was a lot of build toward that This Is Your Life with the whole Rock and Sock connection, but you can't just keep having those things and expecting them to succeed. And as we saw in Raw, it just didn't. But you know, solid Raw. I'm just waiting for the broken Matt because this limbo Matt is just no good to me. I like the Hardys. I like the nostalgia act. I understand whether there's still money to be made with the nostalgia Hardys right now. So they're just kind of, you know, sucking them dry as far as dollars are concerned. And they're a business, so that's kind of what they need to do. So when this broken, when the broken Matt comes, when the broken Hardys think it'll be, and I also understand the reason why they're doing it because they can't, you know, a sixth of people watching TNA than, you know, compared to WWE. So, you know, 1/6 of of the people watching is a very small fraction. So so that's not very good. And so you can't imagine that, you know, the other, you know, 5/6 of your crowd knows anything about the Broken Hearties. But, I mean, I know a lot of people know what the, about the Broken Hearties, but, you know, 3 million people to 300, you know, compared to 300,000 people. Yeah, I mean, that's just not, you can't do it. you can't explain. Yeah, you can't expect, you know, that amount of people to watch, you know, to watch the Raw. So, so it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense that, that they're doing that. And yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to, or you know, a tenth is what I meant to say. But yeah, it's just for a tenth, you know, of you know, 10% of people watch Impact compared to Raw, and that's not that's pretty sad. So
they're saying that WWE's ratings are so bad right now, and this keeps is on like an all time low, and they still leaps and bounds.
And still, only 10% of people watch Impact. You know, and so you can't automatically assume that people are going to know about the Broken Hearties when, you know, 90% of people who watch wrestling don't watch Impact. So, so that's we can't expect that. So that makes sense. I hope that they do it right though, because you know the Hardys had so much creative control when they did the Broken character. So. I really hope that they get that right. As far as SmackDown is concerned, well, real quick, Reigns and Rollins was fantastic. I've been a Reigns advocate and apologist for quite some time now, and stuff like this just furthers my case of why Roman Reigns is just at the point now where people just want to boo him to get themselves over. I mean, there's just, I mean, there's so many positive qualities about Roman Reigns.
He's the new Cena.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that he has the ability to supersede Cena, because Cena, you know, the hustle, loyalty, respect, the colorful gear, stuff like that.
Stuff.
Yeah, but there's not a there with Cena. To me, there was a lost sense of relatability, you know, to him. Because with Roman Reigns, though. You have like a Samoan bad boy. You have like a rugged look still, and you know there's just something about him that's just more catchy, you know, to me. You know, John Cena wore jean shorts and tennis shoes for 15 years, so you know it's well, at least
he was a Marine, and he was in a chain gang, he was a Marine, and then he was a thug, and
he wore the black shorts, the black chain gang, you know, kind of wrestling shorts for a while before he went to the jorts, and he's been stuck with those jorts for a while. He wears khaki pants too every now and then. Khaki shorts.
He doesn't wear jeans. Remember, he used to wear the cuff jeans too.
Yeah,
he was the doctor of tokenomics.
I remember he was. I think he was going against like it might have been Daniel Bryan, but he was going against someone. He wore like Hogan yellow shoes and just like canary yellow pants. Oh my goodness, it was terrible. Like just the canary yellow.
Same haircut.
Yeah,
no facial hair.
I remember when he first came out. I remember the dun 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 dun. The music that he had.
No pastel colored spandex.
And he there was like an interview that he said that he had like dozens of pair of those shorts and like dozens pair of matching boots. You know, that's how serious he was about his wardrobe. But I mean, more power to him. You know, just passion in the business. All right, real quick. As far as SmackDown's concerned, I thought it was solid. I'm interested in a Nakamura Owens feud, but I think just putting it on regular SmackDown without a title involved, and just I'm kind of leery about that booking decision. Good to see the New Day back. They were over, of course. They were in is Averwood's hometown, so that worked. You know, that was a smart thing to do. But, you know, and Breezango is fun, very fun. I think the way that they built up the Women's Money in the Bank was good. Orton promo was just blah. And I'm glad that they gave Ziggler the win because it makes Ziggler, I mean, it didn't hurt Styles. It didn't hurt him. I think he's way over enough. It by Ziggler beating Styles, it had a lot more leverage. It had a lot more impact than if Styles would have beat Ziggler. So this has been another win by Styles and another loss by Ziggler. But since Ziggler won, it was a bit of a shock factor. So I think that's what Ziggler needs. Although he won't win the money in the bank, but that's what he needs to, you know, kind of draw some credibility. All right, ladies and gentlemen, real quick, let's get to the flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, real quick, we are going to grade every single Extreme Rules main event from 2009 to 2016, 8 total. So let's go with the first one. 2009, for the World Heavyweight Championship, Edge versus Jeff Hardy in the ladder match.
You know, my grade falls like school grades, A through D.
Yeah, A through F.
A through F, oh. I give it a B. I remember this, I forgot about this was the main event. I thought it was a good match. I really enjoyed it. Andrew was in his prime. Hardy was getting his push pre-TNA, you know, pre-Victory Road in 2011. But that match was easy.
Man.
Yeah, it was there.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it was pretty good too. It was a very solid match. I give it a B plus because it was interesting that Punk cashed in on Hardy. So I give it a B plus. It was in your home, neck of the woods, in 2010, Baltimore, John Cena versus Batista in the last man standing match.
Yeah, I think it was that. Sadly, I don't remember much about this match. I'll give it a C+. No, T-Big names. You can't really do much here, Marlon. You really can't. That flag commission is pretty strict, but this is when I've seen the Batista this season, and the match was decent. I give about a C+, B minus. It wasn't a bad match. It just was a decent match. It was okay.
Yeah, I think it was solid too. I give it a straight B. Cena won, I believe. Cena
as always.
Won, it was like almost a 25-minute match. So
yeah,
it was really good.
Like half an hour.
Yeah. Yeah, lengthy. Yeah, so I think it was for that particular reason. I give it about a B because it was a pretty, pretty good. It was a pretty solid match. 2011, John Cena won the WWE Championship, a triple threat steel cage match. John Cena and they threw in John Morrison in there. I think that was a very pretty good addition to the match. What do you give it?
The match gets a B because of Morrison. Amazing Cena does not have good chemistry at all. His cage matches really don't tend to go over well at times. So, because our buddy, and I'm going to say this because we're both buddies with Morrison. Morrison added and gave like a new flavor. So,
yeah.
Because of Morrison, it's a B.
Much needed, yeah. Yeah, I'd say B, and that's a very nice B, because I remember this match. It was decent. It wasn't anything to really, you know, laud about, but it was a decent match. You know, Miz beat Cena at Mania, but this is where he lost the title. So, of course, 2012, the Extreme Rules match, Lesnar comes back after Mania and loses to Cena. Beats up Cena throughout the entire match and loses to a chain shot.
He,
that was Really, yeah.
Yeah.
You said D as
D.
in David? D?
Yeah, D as in David. As in King David.
Oh, man. Yeah, I would be a little nervous here. I'd give it a C minus because just the thought of it was terrible. I mean, just the beating that Cena got and then just the chain shot. And then he didn't even sell Lesnar's beating. And I think he like cut a promo like right afterwards, like off the air or some odd. He didn't even sell it. It was just terrible. It was really terrible.
And remember, that's when Lesnar almost killed himself again when he botched him over the top rope, almost landed on his head.
Yeah.
And he got up laughing.
Yeah, that was bad news.
That was funny.
Lesnar beat Triple H the next year in a steel cage match. I mean, it was a B plus. It was a pretty solid match.
F.
It was. You gave that match an F. Wow.
I've been a troll now. That's not an F. I give it a C. Yeah, we saw them wrestle each other at Mania. It's funny to see the theme. Brock. It's the Brock's rematch. It was Mania opponent Extreme Rules. And the match was a C. It was an F. And Triple H is solid. Brock is solid. Mm-hmm. So I thought the match was decent.
Yeah, I did too. I think it was pretty decent match. Daniel Bryan versus Kane in Extreme Rules match. Daniel Bryan won. Solid match. It was a little lengthy, a little like over 20 minutes. But it's just, you know, there was no chance in the world that Kane would win the World Heavyweight Championship. Yeah, I agree. You said
C plus. Yeah, C plus.
Yeah, that's what I gave it to, just because it was a good match, but it just it just wasn't a really good build to me. I mean, Kane was just really just thrown in there for no reason, and just
filler.
The angle was just odd. It was filler. It was just really odd because it was right after Daniel Bryan won at 30. It was trying to figure something out with him, to just throw somebody at him, and he threw Kane at him. It was terrible. Rollins and Orton at 15, the 2015 in the steel cage match.
Clean C. That's
just
passing.
Yeah.
Did you not have good? Besides Mania, did you not have good chemistry?
Mm-hmm.
They just do not mesh well. And Orton can be a great worker, and Rollins is a good worker. They just do not mesh well. Besides that Mania match,
that Mania match
not
was good. But
it's
I give it a. I'd say a. I'd say a C plus. Yeah, I'd say it was a C plus because, like I said, like you said too, the chemistry just wasn't very good. And then lastly, Reigns and Styles last year, Extreme Rules match for the World Heavyweight Championship.
B plus.
I give it an A.
The only reason why.
Fantastic match.
The only reason why I don't give it an A yet is because Reigns was. If it was Reigns now against AJ, then I would give it an A. I'd give it a B plus because we already know what AJ can do. Reigns was just getting to that A plus level where he was, you know, he wasn't the big dog yet. He was like the medium dog. He was. I mean, like it could go either way. Like, the match is very well done.
Yeah,
just like kind of think of I'll be fair. I give it an A minus because people forget the real good match Reigns had with Daniel Bryan. If you remember that,
that was that. Fast Lane.
Yeah, so you kind of think of that. That's the best Extreme Rules pay per view match you're gonna see. Styles is great. You can hate on Reigns all you want. Reigns can work definitely when we kind of think of it, Reigns has pretty good chemistry with everybody he works with. And give it to Brock. Brock and Show had great matches, and Reigns and Show. So Reigns has good chemistry with everybody. I can't remember Reigns really have any bad match with anyone.
SummerSlam a few years back wasn't the best, but it was just Reigns was still real green. Yeah, but he's just leaps and bounds better than he used to be. All right, well, cool. Let's get to Extreme Rules predictions. Only 6 matches for this show. Got about a couple minutes left. Let's get to Rich Swann and Sasha Banks against Noam Dar and Alicia Fox.
The condiments match. It's in my hometown. We'll be getting nachos. Rich Swann and Sasha Banks will win.
Yeah, of course.
But then again, Rich Swann is from here, so WWE don't like
that. Yeah, that hometown curse.
Hometown curse.
Neville and Aries, mission match for the Cruiserweight Championship.
Neville's ears. I got Neville winning this one. You ain't got nothing else better to do. Just stretch this out to SummerSlam.
Aries. Hardy's and Cesaro with a steel cage match.
I got Phil with Cesaro and Sheamus. Have a win to give the Hardys a reason to become broken.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm thinking. Kendo stick on the pole match. How stupid is this? But Alexa Bliss and Bayley.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I know we really don't care. Give it to Bayley only because she wants to get some revenge because of the segment.
Yeah, I say Bayley. I think they'll bring in like Dax to be that dominant heel. Ambrose and The Miz for the IC Championship. If Ambrose is disqualified, he'll lose.
To say it again for the first time. The Miz needs to bring back prestige to that title. Cause Ambrose is born. He's almost getting where Orton is at. Except for Ambrose is looking more prison right now.
Unfortunately, yeah. But I think they'll keep it on Ambrose for some odd reason. Unless they'll have Ambrose chase it. They might have something to do. They might have Maurice it might have Maurice like slap Miz or something like that.
They're just going to face each other off again on Raw the next day for free.
Yeah, exactly. All right, real quick, last match, 5-way. Reigns, Fowler, Wyatt, Joe, Rollins. Who you got? Who's going to face
Brock? That's going to be tough, man. Brock. I would like to see Joe win. You got to see Reigns for Mania. No one cares about Wyatt.
Yeah,
you say Reigns for Mania. No one cares about Wyatt. You got to give it to Joe. I think Joe against Brock will really be a tease. Give it to Balor, it's not believable. Balor's like, it's like us facing our 6-year-old cousin. Punk's way bigger than Finn, and Punk. Yeah, Punk's way bigger than Finn, and he looks like a kid against Brock at SummerSlam.
I don't think they'll give it to Joe just because he still has that heel factor to him. You know, you'll have two heels relatively. I know they were going to do that with Strowman, but it's kind of like a irresistible force versus immovable object type of theme with Strowman and Brock. But with Joe and Brock, it's just heel versus heel. I don't think they'll do that. I think they're going to give it to Balor. The blow-off is Balor versus Brock at Great Balls of Fire, and there you go. All right, real quick, ladies and gentlemen, thank you all. Thank Dan Severin. Hey, hashtag Beast versus Beast, I'm telling you. Hashtag versus Beast. Let's get this thing spread. Let's see Dan Severin versus Brock Lesnar. Under the Mat Radio, check them out Tuesdays at 7, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, follow Crave Wrestling at Crave Wrestling on Facebook, fan page Crave Wrestling. Of course, like I said, on Twitter at Crave Wrestling as well. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say it's a girl. How about that? God is good, and we're expecting our third child.
She's back.
So, God bless you all. Have a good night. Enjoy your week of wrestling. Signing off. Bye.
Good night.